Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Hey, if you're listening to this, I will assume you're at least interested in money, understanding the economy and finances as well. And some of us now want to get the next generation interested as well. So check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. Tune into Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Get 1 month free and an extra $10 when you sign up for a Greenlight account at greenlight.com/million. You know, economics can be funny sometimes in that bad news can be good news. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. Monday today, I do believe the 23rd day of May. Good as always to have you along, everybody. As often happens, when I read something that Neil Irwin's written, I said to myself this morning, man, we have got to get him on the air today and have him help us explain to you what the what with this economy right now. So we did. Get him on the air. Neil, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Kai.
So look, here's your headline. I'm going to read it to you, and then I need an explanation. Economists are lowering growth forecasts, the headline says, and that is good news. Explain, please.
So the economy can only grow so fast and without having inflation. Right now, what we have is an economy that's overheated. We have growth that's been very strong, 5.5% last year. And economists starting the year thought that it would keep up that kind of rate, maybe not quite that fast, but we might get 3-4% growth this year. They're changing that view. Everybody's downgrading their outlook. But I think that's the kind of thing that makes it more likely that inflation will come down and will kind of vanquish this inflation monster for now.
The catch, of course, as you point out, is that slower growth does make us vulnerable to a recession, especially, you say, if there are some unlucky negative shocks. We don't need more unluck in this economy. What could those negative shocks be?
Well, we're seeing some of them, right? The war in Ukraine, the shutdowns in China. These are things that are already causing supply problems around the world and could worsen, could unfold in any number of ways. Monkeypox, we just learned about. The world is full of shocks. The world is full of bad things that can happen. The point, though, is that when growth is slower, when there's slower trend growth, the economy is more vulnerable to actually going into recession because of those shocks. As one example, in 2001, there was the dot-com bust. The economy was slowing, kind of limping along. And then the 9/11 attacks happened in September, and that's what turned it into an actual official recession. So this is a situation where slower growth, a more kind of limping along economy makes us more vulnerable.
We should point out here, I guess I'll point it out since I'm the one who's been saying it on this program for the last couple of weeks. This is what is supposed to happen. The Fed raises rates, financial conditions tighten, companies take a second look at things, and we are supposed to slow down a bit.
Yeah. I mean, look, you just can't grow at 4 or 5% forever because of population trends, because, technological advancement only goes so fast. And it's one thing when you're coming out of a recession, then you're putting people back to work after the pandemic, all these people out of the workforce, they've been coming back in. But eventually you run out of those people. And then to achieve higher growth, you need to have the resources coming from somewhere. And what we've had a lot of the last few months is not that kind of strong, robust growth, but just a lot of inflation. And that doesn't make anybody happy.
Let me take you sideways a little bit. Back when inflation was still in the future, and I'm talking like a year and a half ago, everybody was like, oh my goodness, can we talk ourselves into inflation? So here's the flip side of that coin. Can we talk ourselves into a recession? Can CEOs get so worried about the possibility of a slowdown that they preemptively pull back on capital expenditures and hiring and those kinds of things and make it worse, I guess?
it's certainly a risk, right? There's definitely a change happening in sentiment among executives. You look at CFO surveys, things like that. That can affect hiring plans. For now, what, for example, the Federal Reserve wants to see is this economy come into some sense of balance by hiring levels throttling back and having not so much layoffs, but less hiring. That said, it's also true on the consumer side. The stock market is down a lot this year. And so if you are thinking about buying a house, if you are thinking about spending lavishly on that vacation, maybe you pull back those plans because your stock portfolio is down 20%. Those are the kinds of things that are the ways that financial markets can affect the broader economy.
All right. So let me put you on the spot a little bit. Do you think Jay Powell can get us to that soft landing? And I'll take a, discursive answer as opposed to a hard yes or no, because it's a matter of some subtlety, right?
It is. Look, I'm an optimist. I think this is plausible. I think there is a pathway to a few quarters of growth that's more in the, 1-2% range rather than the 4-5% range, and that supply chain stuff can get resolved and the labor market can find a sense of balance without the kind of mass layoffs and things you see in a recession. At the same time, it's such a narrow landing strip. It's, such a delicate task trying to bring this economy in for that, that very tricky balance of slower growth, less overheating, but not an outright contraction.
Neil Irwin, Chief Economic Correspondent at Axios. Neil, thanks a bunch. Good to have you back on.
Thanks so much, Kai.
On Wall Street today, move along. Everything's fine. Nothing to see here. Makes it crazy, right, when the markets bounce around like this? It does me. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Lost amid the news about Taiwan coming out of President Biden's trip to Asia today, and I'm just going to bank on that little tidbit having been covered extensively elsewhere in your news diet today. Lost in all of that was this. The president says he's going to meet with Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen when he gets back to talk tariffs, the Trump-era China tariffs, to be clear. Yellen wants to reduce at least some of them as a way to take some of the edge off inflation. Others in the Biden administration, though, are less enthusiastic. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has that one.
It's not easy being a small business owner in this economy. Michael Bray is president of Hobbyworks Toy Stores in suburban Maryland, and he's wrestling with a monster, inflation. Bray says 80-90% of the toys he sells are at least partly from China, so the tariffs former President Trump imposed on some Chinese imports push up his prices.
Tariffs are one element of a three-headed monster that's driving inflation right now.
Along with other big headaches for Bray, like supply chain kinks and soaring shipping costs. He says he would pass the savings along if at least some of the tariffs went away. Gary Huffbauer at the Peterson Institute for International Economics says if the U.S. lifted all of the tariffs on Chinese imports, overall inflation would fall by about a percentage point.
And you take off the tariffs, and it immediately goes into lower prices. That's a very quick effect.
But in an interview with Kai, the U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai said Huffbauer is assuming a world with zero tariffs, not realistic. But Huffbauer says the U.S. could use other parts of trade policy to dampen inflation, like lifting quotas on steel from our allies or easing duties on Canadian lumber. Jennifer Hillman is a former U.S. trade negotiator now at Georgetown Law Center. She says these would all be good options for the Biden administration.
If they could strategically reduce some of these tariffs that are not really serving a different and important strategic purpose for the United States, it would make a small but I think meaningful contribution to reducing inflation.
Hillman says it would probably take months to reduce inflation, though. Back at the toy store, Michael Bray would like the Biden administration to act soon so lower prices could make their way to consumers in time for the all-important holiday shopping season. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Barrel of oil today, let's use the U.S. benchmark. Why not, right? West Texas Intermediate costs $110.54. That is off its recent highs. A gallon of gas, according to AAA, is $4.59. That is its recent high, not inflation-adjusted, to be clear. But the point is this. Oil's going down, or maybe flat at worst. Gas is still going up. Last week, as you might have heard, the House passed a bill that would outlaw what it calls predatory gas prices and would expand federal authority to investigate price gouging. We will pause here, though, on this program so that Marketplace's Andy Euler can inject a little economic reality into petroleum politics.
In fuel refining circles, there's a strange-sounding phrase that gets thrown around quite a bit. Crack spread.
A crack spread is the difference between the petroleum product price, such as diesel or gasoline, and crude oil prices.
Jeff Barron is an economist at the U.S. Energy Information Administration. He says it's basically a refiner's profit margin. And right now, the crack spread is pretty vast. We're talking record-breaking territory. That's one reason the price of gasoline or diesel doesn't drop when the price of oil does. Jason Gableman at Cowen says it's not like refiners are holding anything back to inflate prices.
You know, they're trying to produce as much as they can because refining margins are where they are. So they have every economic incentive to run all out.
According to the Energy Information Administration, the U.S. will be using about 95% of its refining capacity in June. Yet we're refining about 1 million barrels per day less than we were just a couple of years ago. What gives?
We're still dealing with COVID hangover, you could call it.
That's Hugh Daigle. He teaches petroleum engineering at the University of Texas at Austin. He says when COVID hit and demand for fuel fell dramatically, a lot of refining companies just shut plants down.
Some refineries just shut down because of lack of demand, and they're, you know, not coming back on. Then there were some weather-related issues also.
Last year's freeze in Texas knocked a bunch of refineries offline, and some are still not operating at full capacity. But if refiners' margins are so big and they're making a killing on every barrel of fuel they get to market, why don't energy companies just build more refineries while the getting's good? You guessed it, cost. Takes a lot of money and a lot of time to build one. Jason Gableman at Cowen says not only that, but
investors do not want to see companies pouring money into organic oil and gas growth.
The long-term prospects for fossil fuels are uncertain. And anyway, most investors right now don't want to be asked to chip in for long-term growth. In the present economic climate, they're demanding a quicker return on their investment. In Austin, I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
Coming up.
This was not around when I was in school.
Yeah, no, me neither. Tell you what. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials, starting the week, adding 618 points, nearly 2%, 31,880. The NASDAQ up 180 points, 1.5%, 11,535. The S&P 500 up 72 points, 1.8%, 39.73. Andy Euler was talking about how limited oil refining capacity is driving prices at the pump. Cost of diesel fuel has been rising, along with regular gasoline, of course. Diesel, key to keeping trucks and trains and barges going to carry a lot of the stuff that we consume in this economy. Anyway, the U.S. Energy Information Administration says that this month the average retail price of diesel fuel was $5.61 a gallon. That is a $2 a gallon increase from January. The latest company to leave Russia over the war in Ukraine, Starbucks. Coffee maker announced today the closure of its 130 stores in Russia, ending a 15-year presence in that country. No big buzz in equities for Starbucks, basically flat. McDonald's, which announced last week it was selling its business in Russia, slathered on 1.7%. As we continue to watch where consumers are in this economy, consumers, of course, all important. Citi downgraded a couple of fashion chains and retailers. Gap dressed down more than 5%. Kohl's unzipped more than 2%. Bonds down. Yield on the 10-year T-note, 2.86%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? Don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. If you happen to be on Instagram and you want to know what it's like to be locked down in Shanghai for 50-something days, might I recommend our China correspondent Jennifer Pak's feed. JPak Radio is her. J-P-A-K Radio, all one word. It is kind of amazing what they are going through over there. Parts of the city, Shanghai, have been unlocked down, but only part. And in some other Chinese cities where restrictions have not been as tight, a lot of businesses, especially foreign-owned companies, say they still can't work normally. Here's Jennifer.
The northern Chinese city of Tianjin has been out of a lockdown since last month. That's what the chair of the European Chamber of Commerce there, Christoph Schrimp, told a news conference this week. And yet,
40% of our local members.
He says 40% of his members had to stop production temporarily because they ran out of materials coming from other parts of China in lockdown. So cargo can't get through, and it's tough for business travelers too. You need multiple tests just to go between Chinese cities. Plus, there's mandatory quarantine if you're coming from abroad, anywhere from 10 days to months, like in northeastern China's Shenyang City, where Harold Comfort heads the local chapter of the EU Chamber.
We are still at 28 plus 28.
That's 28 days of quarantine in a government facility plus 28 more at home. Comfort says these COVID restrictions make it hard to attract foreign talent. And even if you have an all-Chinese staff, China's government now says its citizens can only travel overseas for, quote, essential trips. Bettina Schönbehansen is the chair of the EU Chamber in Shanghai.
Many of the employees of our member companies, they are really shocked about this because obviously they are not allowed to travel anymore. And this makes communication and exchange with the headquarters very difficult.
Chinese government media insist China is still a great place to do business. Foreign direct investment in the first 4 months of this year rose over 20% from 2021. But those investment decisions were made years in advance, says Michael Hart, the president of the American Chamber of Commerce in Beijing. And he's not sure the money will keep rolling in.
Unfortunately, the COVID lockdown this year and the restrictions for the past 2 years are going to mean 3, 4, 5 years from now, we will see investment decline most likely.
Beijing, where he lives, is on the verge of a lockdown, and Tianjin is sliding back into one too. Business leaders say they can't see an end in sight. In Shanghai, on day 53 of the lockdown, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
The head of the European Central Bank, Christine Lagarde, made some interest rate news today. The ECB, Lagarde said, figures that if things with inflation keep going the way they think they are going to keep going, the ECB is going to get out of the negative interest rate game. It has been 8 years now that the ECB has been experimenting with negative rates. And as Marketplace's Lily Jamali explains, a lot has changed in those 8 years.
Most of us grew up in a world where if you put money in the bank, you'd get interest. Maybe not a lot, but something. Think of negative interest rates as the opposite. You pay the bank to hold on to your money. Carsten Jeske is at ING.
The idea behind it is to make savings so unattractive that banks hand out more loans and households no longer save, but start investing or just consuming.
Until 2014, when the European Central Bank became the first major central bank to try it, making interest rates negative seemed kind of like defying economic gravity. David Wessel is at the Brookings Institution.
I think most of us thought, yeah, well, that's a nice idea, but could never really happen.
But it did happen and helped push the value of the euro lower. That, in turn, boosted the European economy by making its goods more attractive to foreign buyers. Just like the Federal Reserve, the European Central Bank, or ECB, is now trying to phase out access to easy money.
The ECB has a pretty tricky job here, much harder than the Federal Reserve. The Fed has a strong economy and too much inflation. Europe, in part because of what's going on in Ukraine, has a weak economy and too much inflation.
Wessel says that means Europe's central bank will probably move a lot more gingerly than policymakers here in the U.S. Klaus Vistesen at Pantheon Macroeconomics says economists will be watching for whether it can stick with a slow and steady approach.
If the ECB raises interest rates now, and then if you and I are speaking 6-9 month time, maybe they're lowering interest rates again. That would be a disaster for the ECB.
And it's a real risk for an economy still dealing with the pandemic and a war just over its borders. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
College students across the country are in the middle of graduation festivities, getting set to take all that hard-earned wisdom and make an actual living. But that making a living thing that some universities are preparing graduates for ain't like it used to be. And that gets me to the brand new Marketplace desk of Gen Z influencers. Colleges are offering classes in TikTok. Claire Ballantyne wrote about it the other day for Bloomberg, specifically a course offered at Duke University called Building Global Audiences, but known to the in crowd as the TikTok class.
I first learned about this from my college group chat. One of the girls from that I went to Duke with saw one of these people on TikTok posting a video of the class. And from there, I kind of dug into it, found out that other colleges are doing this too. And this was not around when I was in school. I wish it was. And
yeah, me neither. I'd be maybe in a whole different line of work, but
maybe I wouldn't be a journalist. That's but right. I went to Duke and I sat in on the class. Basically, it's a group of about 30 undergraduates, some interested in being the stars of videos, some interested in being behind the camera. Huh. But it's all about learning how to optimize your viewership on social media, promote yourself, and in some cases, even make money off of videos through advertising. So it encompasses this really crazy new medium of TikTok, but also some very applicable skills to any career, like marketing yourself right. and building a brand around your content.
Right. And there is some rigor to this course as well, right? I mean, you have to figure out analytics and the stuff that's going to stick with an audience. I mean, it's not just, hey, let's make a TikTok video.
Right. And even that simple act of making a TikTok video takes a lot of work. It takes editing, multiple shoots. And then along with that, these kids are analyzing their videos and then trying to figure out why did something do well and something not? How can we get more viewers? So it really delves into a lot of interdisciplinary topics going on.
Okay. On the theory, which not all people subscribe to, but which does hold some water, on the theory that college ought to teach you how to make a living once you get out, there is money to be made if you can figure out how to be an influencer on TikTok, even a relatively modest influencer.
Definitely. One of the students in the class was making, you know, up to $6,000 or $7,000 a month from her TikTok videos. And that's on the extreme end. But even on the lesser end, you know, you can get a pretty solid amount of money, especially for a young person in college through these. And for some, the goal is to keep doing this even as a full-time career once they build up enough of an income stream.
Do you suppose this is where sort of college goes in this age of Gen Z and just social media and things that are not, you know, the classic liberal arts education?
Well, it was fascinating. I was talking with a professor, and his background is in English literature, and he approaches this through TikTok being a new form of communication. Yeah. He was saying that, you know, similar to how colleges have film departments on campus now, in 10 years or so, they'll have social media departments. And I don't think that's that crazy of an idea anymore. I mean, this is something that's going to be around for a while.
Claire Ballantyne, she's a personal finance reporter at Bloomberg, writing about the TikTok class at Duke. Claire, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
This final note on the way out today, the perils of lagging indicators. We used to talk about this a lot more than we have lately, that a lot of the metrics we use in this economy tell us what happened, not where we are going. And we got one of those, a lagging indicator, from the Federal Reserve today, a report titled The Economic Well-Being of U.S. Households in 2021, which really ought to be your first clue. In the fourth quarter of last year, the Fed says 78% of adults reported either doing okay or living comfortably financially, and that self-reported financial well-being reached its highest level since 2013. Now, to be clear, as Neil Irwin was talking about as we got going today, this economy is reasonably strong right now. But since the fourth quarter of 2021, which is going on 6 months ago now, right? Inflation has kept going up, and gas, as I believe you know, is $4.59 a gallon. And have you seen the stock market? Lagging indicators, they will get you every single time. All right, we're going, but here's your moment of economic context. Comes to us courtesy of Christine Lagarde, which, as I said a couple of minutes ago, she is the head of the European Central Bank. Anyway, she did an interview with a Dutch talk show yesterday and said this of cryptocurrency, quote, "My very humble assessment is that it is worth nothing. It is based on nothing. There is no underlying asset to act as an anchor of safety." End of quote. As always, I must add here, consult your own financial professional. Our daily production team includes Anais Amin, Andy Corbin, Richard Cunningham, Riel Honhorst, Sean McHenry, and Daisy Palacios. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.